from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful, sunny California. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon to the Water Zone Show. I'm Rob Starr, along with, well, someone who's cultured, charismatic, considerate, credible, cordial, charitable, cheerful, captivating, caring, confident, clever, collected, chivalrous, classy, centered, capable, charming, and clear-headed. Oh. No, that was for the next guy coming on. I'm sorry. Mr. Chris Davies, give him a welcome. Give him a big hand. Good afternoon, Chris.
Great to see you too, Rob.
How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks very much. Great to see you too, Robin. Is there any other letter of the alphabet you know how to start words with than the C? Than the letter C?
I'll do a different one next week. I used to do that for Mike a lot. So I haven't done that for you, so I figured I would do that.
All right. What an intro.
So that was good. Hey, a couple of upcoming events that are happening. The 12th Annual San Bernardino Water Conference, that's sponsored by the Building Industry Association, the County of San Bernardino, is August 10th at the Doubletree Hotel in Ontario. And then again in August, the American Water Works Association, their education seminar, that's going to be at Santiago Canyon College in Orange, California. That's on August 22nd. So if you need to find out about that, you can look up AWWA, and it's actually www.ca-nv-awwa.org or 909-481-7200. And back to the San Bernardino Water Conference, if you want to know about that, you can go to www.biabuild.com/waterconference or 909-945-1884. But to make it really simple, just go to send us an email at waterzone@toro.com. And we'll reply to you. That's our new number.
We'll get to the information that you need. And Rob, I know that you are a BIA member, right? And have been for...
I'm on the board of directors.
Yep, for many, many years. Both events, great to go to if you want to get the latest on what's happening in the industry and get some education.
Yep, I'm also on the AWWA.
You are indeed.
So anybody who wants to call in, please do so. Our numbers are 888-909-1050. And if you're local to us out here in California, you can do 909-792-5222. So, that's enough to give all of our people the greatest information.
Right. We have an awesome guest tonight, do we not? Or you have one more thing to cover?
One more. On August 7th, I'm going to New Mexico. Can you guess what city? I'll give you a hint.
Are you going to make me laugh?
Gallup,
New Mexico. Yes. I was waiting for the two half coconut shells to come out and you click them together. That would have been a better hint.
And
for
guess
the guys
what we're giving
the
away? We're giving away a $40,000 Prius, Toyota Prius. But that's with the Wyland Foundation. we're supported to them. And that was for one of the city winners for the National Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation. And what's nice about that, this year we usually give it to an individual, but there are individual prizes for a whole bunch of people, hundreds of prizes. But this particular winner, actually what we decided to do is to go to the city who won and ask them, which charity should we donate it to instead of just a person? We thought that might be a little, I know people need cars, but charities need things too. Most of that is by personal money. So this way they get to have a $40,000 Prius, and I think that's a nice thing to do. So we're giving it away that day and also celebrating for the city of Gallup who won in their classification. So we're very excited about that. Anyway, that's on the 7th,
that's
so I'll
awesome.
Be traveling anyway. All right, so we got a good show tonight. Have a really good show tonight. Let me get my papers organized.
Yeah, great guest coming up from the Water Environment Federation. So we're looking forward to introducing this young man as he gets on the phone for us. Yep. I know, Rob, you've got a little bit of information.
Absolutely. His name is Travis Loop, and Travis Loop has 20 years of experience in the communication and media with heavy focus on water issues. He's currently the Director of Communications for the Water Environment Federation, which is commonly known as WEF or WEF. Travis was previously the Director of Communications for Water at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. That's the EPA for people who didn't know that. And the Chesapeake Bay program, as well as the speechwriter for the governor of Hawaii. Hey, we can hire him. I can use him. He was also a newspaper reporter and an editor in North Carolina, Washington, D.C., and Hawaii. He cares about clean water because he's a father, surfer, dog owner. He wants to smell nice, nature guy, and beer fun. Hey, that's your
rings,
topic.
That rings my bell.
And I know you have a question about beers and breweries coming up.
I do indeed. We'll save that for a little later.
Absolutely. So, Travis, from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for coming on our show. We appreciate it.
Oh, well, I'm so happy to be on here with you guys. I can tell just from the intro chatter that this is going to be fun.
Yep.
So I'm happy to be on here. And I hear you mention being a member of AWWA. Hopefully, you know, we can get you on the WEF membership as well.
Oh, excellent.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And you've done some stuff with the Wildland Foundation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was excited to hear you mention that and heading out to Gallup. When I was at EPA, we definitely supported that Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation. A terrific campaign each spring to really raise public awareness about ways to conserve water and the importance of stewardship. So Wyland's a terrific ambassador for water, and his foundation, you know, led by Steve Creech, they do great things, especially in Southern California. There.
Oh yeah, and Wyland, who's a renowned a marine artist, him and Steve had gone last year to the United Nations, and now we're going to take this program not only national but international. And they met at the UN and got a proclamation, so that's going to be really excited. We're happy about that. So can you tell
water's a global issue, so that's appropriate.
No, yeah. No doubt. So for our listening audience, can you tell us what WEF is, so the Water Environment Federation is?
Yeah, it's made up of 35,000 members around the world, people that clean and recycle water. So these are people that are utility managers. They might be plant operators, engineers, technology folks, regulators, academics. So it's folks all around the water sector that work in our communities and this country and other countries to clean, treat, and recycle water. And so our organization really works on their behalf. We help to provide a lot of technical and educational resources. We advocate for the water sector. We try to give them tools to help increase public awareness, the importance of water, and we really try to push innovation and technology forward, because that's where a lot of our solutions to our water challenges lie.
Travis, this is Chris. What's your role there? I know that during the introduction, the little bio that Rob read, we just got your title. But so for our listening audience, what does that entail? Can you tell us a little bit about that, Travis?
Yeah, good question. So, Director of Communications and Public Outreach, actually. So, you know, I'm the public relations guy. I work on our messaging. I work on media relations. Social media is huge. Web content, helping our executives and board members as they are out there at events. And really, our big focus is trying to raise public awareness about the importance of clean water, you know, to our health, to our communities, to the economy. So that's really the overriding mission of what I do at WEF and one of our organization's, you know, primary focus areas.
Another good question for the listeners would be, what's the background, what motivates the members, the 35,000 members, to become a part of the WEF? I mean, what's sort of a typical cross-section of your membership look like?
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody in water, there's a lot of folks that work in water, but they want a way to stay connected, to stay connected with their peers in other markets and other cities and other countries. They want to be able to stay up on the latest and greatest information. They want someone that's advocating on their behalf, and they want an opportunity to be part of a lot of the conferences that we put on. And so that's, I think, why a lot of folks get involved with the Water Environment Federation, why they're members. And also, even though folks work, there's a lot of folks working in water and they're all over the place, there's a real kinship, I guess. People that work in water feel like they're part of this tribe, because it's a deeply personal mission. It's a job where you really are passionate about the work that you're doing. You really care about the results and helping the community that you're in to have clean water. So folks want to be part of that larger effort. And I think that's why they they join WEF and participate as much as they do. We also put on the biggest water party in the world, basically, every year, and it's called WEF Tech. And it turns into a small city where we've got over 20,000 people that come together from all around the world just to have a conference and talk about water, to see the equipment, and to network together. So that's a fun time, and it's in New Orleans this year. So a great water city.
Who doesn't like a party, and who doesn't like New Orleans for a party?
Exactly.
All right, so,
and one of the other I guess duties or things I do at WEF that's kind of fun, and you guys would appreciate this, is I produce our podcast, which is called Words on Water, and it just features conversations with interesting and influential people from across the water sector. It's on iTunes and Google Play and all those kind of usual places. So it's that's a lot of fun, and you know, there's so many interesting people out there.
Great. So if we were to take a look at the focus of WEF, right, do you have a mission statement, for example, and something that sort of sums up in a paragraph or a couple of sentences what you're in existence to do?
Yeah, we're in existence. We are the water quality people. That's kind of our tagline. That's what it boils down to. We're the people out there that clean that water, that treat the water, that make sure that when it comes out of treatment plants and it goes back into our rivers and our creeks, our streams, the ocean, that water is clean, that people that then swim, fish, the environment itself can enjoy that clean resource. So that's why we call ourselves the water quality people.
Wow. Well, you sure got a lot of members, and I see you had 75 affiliated member associations. So, and it's not just U.S., as you said, it's...
Yeah, no, thanks. So, you know, in the United States, we have 45, you know, member associations, you know, chapters, if you will, all around the country. But then we've got another 30 international associations. And so water, like we said before, is a huge global issue. So we've got affiliates around the world, and we definitely have a heavy presence at some of the big global water conferences that happen in Singapore and in Stockholm, places like that. So definitely a global organization. And it's a lot of fun being part of that.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things that's interesting to me is from doing the show starting in June of 2015 is, yes, I'm in the business, but how much more I've learned and the contacts and the technology that I'll say stumbled across or you know, you're right. When you start networking and start finding, I mean, there's so many things. And then when I talk to my neighbors and other friends and they don't understand what's really happening, they just get the quick sound bites off the news about things and they don't really understand everything. And for me, I got to tell you, I learned a whole lot of things in the last 2.5 years on this, and I've been very excited about it. So on infrastructure, if we talk about that for a second, America's water's infrastructure is aging and crumbling. You know, some of it's like here in L.A. and California is over 100 years old. And, you know, we need to invest in the infrastructure, which also generates economic activity. I kind of believe that the real administration in Washington is for that, and I hope both parties get together and not be totally opposite of each other and come to something that say, look, this is for the common good of the nation. We have to have water to live. We have to have water to grow food. And we have water for manufacturing and all these things. You know, I think there's a big struggle going on with people who, you know, they're very biased on one side versus the other, and both sides, you know. It's got to stop. It's got to come together and do something. What's your views and your organization's interesting on that, interests on that?
Yeah, you're right about water infrastructure. So, you know, during last century, we built this incredible water infrastructure across our country. And, you know, our previous generations were part of this. But like you said, a lot of these systems have been around for 75, 100 years, even more. You know, there's like wooden pipes and stuff they find in places like Philadelphia or whatever that go back further. And so in America today, like a water main breaks every 2 minutes. So all these pipes and pumps and plants are really at the end of their lifespan. In the meantime, we've got more people, we've got more growth, and the demand for more water infrastructure. And at the same time, as you guys know there, we've got some impacts of climate change where you're seeing droughts or you're seeing just storms that utilities need to be resilient to. So there's all these challenges and demands. And infrastructure, water infrastructure, is out of sight and out of mind for a lot of people. We drive on roads. Some of your listeners are probably driving on a road right now. we ride on trains. We see airports. We have the internet in our house, all these other infrastructures. But water infrastructure is largely underground, so people don't really see it and maybe have the full appreciation. And I think that's maybe why the funding has gone down, especially from the federal government over the past number of decades. Federal government, like you mentioned, they used to pay about 63% of the annual spending on water infrastructure. That was in the late 70s. And now it's down to less than 10% of annual spending from the federal government. And we all know that state and local governments have tough budget situations, too. So the question is, where is this funding going to come from? Because we need that water infrastructure. Yeah. And we heard, at the beginning of this administration about a commitment to infrastructure. We've even heard chatter about water infrastructure. So we are hoping that we see some activity from Congress on this. It does seem to be something that would have and does have bipartisan support. So we're looking to see something happen there. And the thing that you also mentioned is the economic benefit. This isn't just, we have to spend because we have to do this. But there is so many studies and so much research on when you invest in water infrastructure, you generate tremendous economic activity. And you generate a lot of jobs. So somebody's got to build this infrastructure. They've got to install it. They have to maintain it. It's a great ripple effect.
Well, I think
it's
people
really a no-brainer.
I think people know an outside out of mind. I guess they notice when there's a 30-foot sinkhole that all of a sudden pops up in the middle of the street.
And makes the 11 o'clock news.
Yeah. And you were writing me some things about in 2016 an assessment by the American Society of Civil Engineers, and the study estimated that the U.S. and this was done two years ago needs to invest an additional $82 billion per year in water infrastructure, and that should take 10 years to meet the projected capital needs. The question I always have, as just a meager citizen in California, and just one person out of 300 and something million people here in the States, I don't understand how they don't get the priorities straight. It's like, what's the top 3-4 issues in the country? What's the top 3-4 issues in the state, in the county, and the local? And that's what they should work on instead of. And in California, they passed, I heard, like 800 and something new laws last year. How can you do that every single year? I mean, without water, let's face it, we won't be here. And sure. I just don't understand the priority. It needs to be done. I mean, you look at one last thing. I went to a water conference with Chris for Orange County, California, and they were saying there's 200 to 300 small water private agencies that can't deliver clean water.
Throughout the country,
where people are very poor and such. I believe it's a right to get clean water, period. And I don't understand the people in high places in government who, they all say that, but comes down to do that. Do you think that they're going to take this seriously with the infrastructure, especially with the water? I mean, yes, we need bridges and roads and all of that stuff, but in all, do you think they could come together to make this happen?
It would seem so. It would seem to make so much sense. It seems like a great place to invest our federal dollars.
Yep.
Because, like I said, that return on the investment, because of the importance of the investment. One of the things is we wanted to figure out where the American people stood on this, on the idea of the federal government investing more in water infrastructure.
Right.
And we're part of something called the Value of Water Campaign. We're a founding member of that. And they conduct annual polling to see, okay, how do people feel about this? What importance do they want us to place on it? And the numbers are really overwhelming. You've got like 80% of respondents saying that it's extremely important, very important for the federal government to invest in infrastructure. And those statistics, the polling even looks at Democrat, Republican, and Independent, and there's pretty strong bipartisan support for that water infrastructure. So there's no political risk for our members of Congress and the administration to pursue this and to invest in water infrastructure.
Well, maybe they'll all come together and be buddies.
Yeah, especially in the light of the economic return that you were mentioning, Travis. I mean, that's not just, you know, a boon to cities and states and counties, but also to the jobs in the United States, right? All of the jobs that are provided by that. And all of those people, especially the ones that work in our industry, in the water industry these days, right? I mean, there's been the last few years where I know we've talked to a lot of folks, and some people on our show have wondered what the future of their jobs are, you know, and where they're going to go, because they really haven't seen a velocity or change in velocity in the way that the country or their state or their county looks at infrastructure improvement. So everybody's got that to look forward to, right, as part of that economic activity that you mentioned.
Absolutely. I mean, the economic report that came out that talked about, as you mentioned, that $82 billion we need a year across all levels of government, we're like, hey, if that was invested, if that happened, we would generate about 1.3 million jobs over that 10-year period of investment. So that's a lot of jobs.
Oh, yeah.
So all people in this in this industry, you know, they've got to do the work, right? So it's guys like us, like Rob and I, and everybody else in the water industry. So what are the challenges you see that are facing the water workforce, if you will?
Yeah, so I think everybody's familiar, I think, with the baby boomer generation and how that's really moving into retirement age or are retiring. And so a very large portion of the water workforce is eligible for retirement or reaching that age, a greater percentage than I think even the broader workforce. And so, you know, this is like the silver tsunami that's coming. And so we really need to, in addition to the infrastructure, we need to be bringing more people into the water workforce. And there's tons of career fields in water. They're well-paying jobs. And they're in every community. Every community in this country has water facilities, water services, a water industry, and there are all kinds of opportunities there. So that's really something that we at the Water Environment Federation and our colleagues across the sector are focused on, is building up the water workforce, getting more people in it. The Brookings Institution just recently put out a terrific report on the water workforce. And they found that 1.7 million people are directly involved in the United States water infrastructure, and that includes over 200 different types of jobs, like plumbers, electricians, technicians, all that kind of thing. So, like I was saying, it's a great field. It's everywhere. They pay well. The average wages exceed the national average. And a lot of times people can get into the water workforce without having a lot of formal education. You don't need to have a college degree. There are so many different types of jobs, so many different types of work, and so much opportunity. So that's something that we're concerned about, getting enough people into the water sector, but we're also touting how great the water careers are for folks.
Are there many, let me jump in here real quick. Are there many trade organizations that bring we call it interns in and train them, because this is something they can't really get at the normal schools, correct?
Mm-hmm. You're right. There's a lot more of this happening, not through like trade schools, but the water sector itself is doing a lot more to bring people in, bring young people in, high schoolers or those just out of high school, and or those that are kind of underemployed, and show them water jobs and try to get them interested. A place like Baltimore has a real terrific program where they're bringing people in, they're rotating them through different jobs, exposing them to different careers and so forth, and finding where people fit. So a lot of this is really the water sector reaching directly out in the communities. Just up the coast from you guys in San Francisco, they have something called Baywork, and it's a couple dozen water utilities around the greater Bay Area have all come together, and they've got a terrific outreach program where they're promoting water careers, bringing kids in, finding internships, and creating trainings and all of that. So it's something that's definitely happening.
Yeah, a lot of those jobs, Travis, it's good to point out, are not always in the skilled water trades, if you will. I mean, you know, it just goes broadly over many of the supporting disciplines for the industry. Just management in general, right? Administration, finance, that kind of stuff, and you know, carpenters, welders, yeah,
PR,
communications,
yeah.
Right? So it's a broad spectrum.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about resource recovery. You know, there's a shift underway, and we no longer view it as wastewater. Some things to be treated and pumped away, and it is viewed as a resource. Facilities are reusing water, generating energy and recovering nutrients. So when we think water is not a waste but a resource, how do we educate the public about that?
Yeah. I mean, this is something I get, like, pretty personally excited about. It's so cool. You know, for a century or more, you know, we viewed water as a waste. That's why they were called wastewater treatment plants. You just get that water in, get that sewage in, treat it, put it in a pipe, get it out of there. And then we've realized that, wait a minute, there are a lot of resources right here. These actually become like water resource recovery facilities. As you mentioned, that water can be cleaned to incredibly high standards and reused in a lot of different ways. Irrigation for a golf course or whatever it might be, or re-injected even into the ground, into the aquifers. In Orange County there, they have the largest groundwater recharge effort in really the world, where they're putting millions and millions of gallons of water back into the aquifer because they've cleaned it to such a high level. So that's an example of reusing water. And then generating energy. You know, these facilities are able to use technology to generate energy, methane gas, and so forth. They're putting solar on their facilities. And then also recovering nutrients. So this is like nitrogen and phosphorus that's in that waste when it comes in. And there's ways to extract that and turn it into fertilizer, to turn it into a product called biosolids, which farmers absolutely love. And so it's just an exciting time here with technology in the 21st century, where the whole water treatment sector is just flipping over into this total new paradigm. It's really cool.
We had the previous Consul General of Israel on. He was talking about how they mined all the wastewater and sell it to Iran, Iraq, and other places that are their enemies. They did a thing. We also had, I don't know if you know Mihu Patel. He's from the Orange County wastewater facility, and he was on talking about it and talking, and I guess he needed somebody like you to write the communication stuff, because when they first put it out, they called it from toilet to tap. And then they wanted to change the name because people didn't realize. And then when they took people on tours, they gave them a glass of water, and everybody was afraid to try it. So he would sit there or stand there and drink the whole thing in front of them. And, you know, he didn't glow. He didn't glow. They turned the lights off. He didn't glow. So everybody was happy about that. But you know, it's the educational portion that's important. Yeah. But I know one thing. I know Chris wants to get to, because.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask a question about, as a product manager, right, for most of my career, right, you got to be careful what you name things, and we've had a couple of other conversations with guests on about the calling water waste, right, and the name of it. So, I was reading in the notes, Travis, how you made a little retrospect about the mainstream media, you know, has really made the public awareness reach full steam on this, because we continue to call it wastewater. So, you know, Rob and I have talked about it before. We're all for renaming that or giving it some sort of a new label or moniker or
It's like the word conservation for irrigation. I mean, years ago, that was everybody, got to conserve. And it sounded like the government, you know, when you hear that word conserve, that people think, you know, you're going to get forced to do that. So, you know, we started using the term 12 years ago, better water use of water, water efficiency. It sounds nicer. You know, just like
right.
I joke about I don't know your age, and I'm not going to ask you, but Chris might remember this. Years ago, they had a thing in Washington. It's still there, but it's a different name. It was called the National Bureau of Standards.
Yeah.
Okay? And you might have heard of that. And they would come up with all the standards for metrics, for liquids, for measuring, you know, anything you can think of. But they changed it because people didn't like it. They thought it was too authoritative when you hear it. So now they change it to the National Institute of Science and Technology. It's a lot. It's a lot, but you know, it gets away from the pounding on the table, and you know the meaning of that. But the water use efficiency is good. Now, I know the next subject that Chris is going to talk about is dear to his heart, and from your bio, I guess it's near to yours, and it's about beer.
this whole conversation was just a setup for this.
I like the way you think, Travis.
So, I talked about reusing water, and we talked about building public awareness, and we talked about technology. And so these plants, a lot of the plants, not all of them, can treat water so that it meets or beats drinking water standards. I mean, we're talking about very high level purity water. And someone was saying if we want people to be interested in water, then we need to make beer with it and use that water to make beer. So this started up the coast outside of Portland, Oregon, Clean Water Services. They got brewers to use this purified water that did come from a treatment plant, and they made Pure Water Brew, the world's most sustainable beer. And this happened several years ago. And the idea is, like, here's a way to show the public, look at how we can treat water. We want you to be aware of the water cycle. We want you to realize that we need to reuse it. It's really a big public awareness piece, and it's incredible. And so this has just grown. Just down the road from you in San Diego, I think 2 years ago, Stone Brewing, which is like the eighth biggest craft brewer in the United States, made Full Circle Pale Ale, which was made from San Diego pure water there. And they had an event, and with the mayor, and everybody drank the beer, and it's great. So this has been happening all around the country now over the past several years, in Florida, Milwaukee, Colorado. Arizona last year had 26 commercial brewers in a statewide contest. And so we pulled together the Pure Water Brewing Alliance. This is brewers, utilities, engineering firms that are all interested in this whole brewing beer with purified water phenomenon, really. And at our big conference in New Orleans, we're going to have a beer garden this year with the beer. There's going to be a mobile treatment trailer there so people can learn about the technology. And everyone seems happy to try it and drink it whenever we bring that beer around.
Wow, that's perfect. I mean, Stone's one of my favorite breweries, so I guess the only thing I can say is it gives all new meaning to the term IPA, right? So.
That's right. I don't know which late show it is that has James Corden on it, but after Stone did that, he did a segment in his monologue, talking about this beer from sewage thing, and he made a couple funny jokes like, now they're going to make extra brown ale, and they're also going to have one called Somebody Had Asparagus Last Night.
Yeah. Well, Chris,
but it's still, everybody laughs and it's funny, but
sure.
It plants the seed
it's real.
In somebody's mind.
And they probably they wouldn't even know if they tasted it. I know Chris doesn't buy beer, he rents beer.
That's correct. I think everybody does that.
All water is recycled.
Yes.
That's right. The same water that was here 3 billion years ago is the same water that's here today.
Now, so let me ask you a question with these brewers. Will it be a thing down the road that they'll have a mini purification system in there? Because or are they going to put this recycled water, if that's correct, the purified water back into the main system?
I mean, who knows exactly where things will go and where the technology will go? I mean, that's not it right now. Really, it's about brewers partnering with a utility.
Right.
And from their facility, they can produce this high quality water. But that's kind of the model right now. But who knows?
Yeah, before, Rob, you mentioned the term toilet to tap. That can apply to beer as well.
Yep.
And I say the brewers are awesome partners because these guys are like chemists, and they know what they're doing with water. They have incredible stewardship ethic, and they have this credibility in the community also. So they're terrific to work with.
Yep.
Okay, so Travis, we're coming down to the last minute and a half or so of what we've got here. So why don't you take an opportunity to talk a little bit about the Words on Water, the podcast you were talking about a little bit earlier in the show, while we have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So, you know, I started out my career as a reporter, a newspaper reporter, and I've always kind of had that journalist in me. And I, you know, the Water Environment Federation, with 35,000 members and all this, all these great connections and amazing things happening in water. I started this podcast at WEF, Words on Water. And it, like I said, it just features conversations with a lot of these people who work on water issues. They're talking about the challenges, talking about the opportunities. They're pretty casual conversations. And it's really been a lot of fun. I've been surprised that people have listened in 95 countries, I think, around the world in the first 8 months that it's been up and running. And so, people, like I said, can get it on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or just go to wef.org/wordsonwater and check out episodes on there.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, I hope you've enjoyed being on the show with us, Travis. We certainly do appreciate the time and the insight that you've provided. Any last comment?
No, I'm so grateful for you guys being on, and I hope people out there can, you know, be advocates for their local water utility and learn more about water.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for being on the show. I'll contact you tomorrow or next week. I want to talk to you about a couple things as well. So thanks for coming on. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back to the Water Zone in just 2 minutes.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Let's talk drought stress. No one likes burnt plants or grass, especially your customers. So when it's hotter than a tin roof in Tallahassee, what are you gonna do? Water the problem away? Not only does that abuse a vital resource, it's illegal in many cities. Here's a quick and easy solve that won't get you in trouble with Mother Nature or Johnny Law. Plied is a year-round program. Moisture Manager from LESCO supplements regular irrigation by attracting moisture to treated areas, thus making the moisture available to plant roots. This maintains wettability between waterings and rainfall, allowing soil to accept water as it becomes available, and making the water more accessible to the plant roots. Boom! More green, less watering, and a great new reason to see your customers on a recurring basis. With LESCO Moisture Manager and Site One, high heat is no sweat.
Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone. We appreciate that. And that was a great guest. And God, I want to talk to him more.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
Yeah.
Some good topics.
Great.
But now we have somebody that's the the maven of Maven's Notebook.
Our favorite.
Yes, Ms. Chris Austin. Chris, welcome to the show.
How you doing, guys?
We are doing good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I just got back from Sacramento.
Ah.
I hear that's a great...
Where it's really hot.
Yeah, I hear that's a great place to come back from.
So I was reading your as we always do, the Maven's Notebook at mavensnotebook.com, and I saw this thing that tweaked my interest. And the only reason it tweaked my interest, for one thing, it made me laugh, but I also saw something about this on a previous show called Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern, where I guess it's part of the science thing, the Nutria Alert. Save a wetland, eat a rodent.
Yeah, I know. Ooh, huh?
Yeah, ooh is right.
I wouldn't think of that, but that's something that's been suggested with a lot of these invasive species, like lionfish is another. Mm. You know, they say, well, if you just start fishing them out and eating them, we can take care of the problem. But, these are rodents, they're pretty
big,
nasty things.
And they're big.
Yes, they're big. Don't you think a rodent is small? I think a rodent's like rats or something.
No, these things are huge. I saw this thing on Bizarre Foods with this guy, Andrew Zimmern. He was out in a boat, and they shoot these things.
Yeah.
You got to shoot them with a rifle because they're big. I mean, they're like a little dog.
Yeah, apparently they found them here a while back, maybe like 10, 15 years ago, and they thought they had eradicated them. But then all of a sudden they found a bunch, and so it's actually been a big concern because we're trying to restore all these wetlands, and, you know, Nutria like to eat through all those wetlands and destroy them.
Yep.
So, and they're, they're invasive, so they're not supposed to be here.
Well, you know, people eat rattlesnake and all these other things. I mean, it's just our culture thinking about what we eat or what we don't. I've been to the LA Fair and the Orange County Fair, and they have these exhibits where they come in and they cook mealworms and spiders and, you know, cockroaches and all that stuff. But part of the world, that's all protein.
So, yeah, in some places they do that. In some countries they eat dogs. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
You know, so it's all, I guess, a matter of what you're used to. I guess I'm not really comfortable with the idea of eating those things.
Yeah.
But,
no, let's hope they don't show up on local restaurant menus anytime soon.
Yeah. So,
the name Nutria, it doesn't sound like it's a bad thing, right?
It's nutritious.
It sounds like a supplement to be taken.
Nutritious and delicious. Tastes just like chicken.
Well, that's like we're talking. It's like talking to our last guest where we talked about the toilet to tap. I mean, it's all in the marketing. So if we come up with a new name for this, it might sell.
Yeah, you never know.
Hey, Chris, you and I can get one of those food trucks, and we can start a Nutria. What do you call those?
Yep. Right. Well, we both know we like food trucks from our time on the road.
Yeah.
So we seek them out, and
So what's happening with the state approving $2.5 billion to build new dams and water storage projects? Yay!
Yeah, they finally the Water Commission has made their decision. Although the legislation specifically sort of made them jump through a bunch of hoops. So it's not really the commission that was dragging their feet. They're just trying to comply with the legislation. Mm. But yes, finally they have. They've decided on funding the storage projects, and they're all really are primarily Northern California projects, although there were a few down here that did get some funding. There's a project in Chino Basin that got funding, and there's some other water bank projects that are in, like, not located in the Los Angeles greater area, but adjacent, and they provide benefits to the Los Angeles area. One of them is in the Kern Valley, a Kern Water Bank project, where a lot of Southern California water is banked over there in Kern County. They've gotten very good at this. They have great geology for it, and it's located right next to the aqueduct. So, when times get tough, the water agencies here can call on the water, and they just stick it in the aqueduct, and over the hill it comes. It's very effective. And so they have expanding that project down in the Kern County to the benefit of, I think it's Irvine Ranch Water District will have that one, and then there's the Chino Basin. And then there's one very interesting project out in the Antelope Valley called the Willow Springs. And it's very technical what they're doing. They have a water bank, and they have power, and they have all these things. And, I mean, it's more than I could explain to you without having to dig in there and look at it again. But it's quite one of those really technical projects. So, basically, there were some projects approved for Southern California. And this one reservoir called Sites Reservoir, where a lot of Southern California agencies have bought into that because, so they get a share of the water from that one. So we did get some benefits from it, but a lot of benefits did also go to the Bay Area. They'll be expanding two reservoirs there. It's a good thing.
No, I was just going to say, it's excellent. I heard it was four new dams and four underground storage projects. That's going to be awesome. But is it still true that the state's still considering cutbacks for Central Valley irrigation districts?
Well, the Central Valley, there's a lot of things going on. And those cutbacks that they're talking about they're trying to update the standards for flows in the rivers that flow into the delta. And these are salmon-bearing rivers where they're just being sucked pretty much like dry. I mean, they could go down to maybe 10 to 12% of their normal flow during the spring when farmers are irrigating. And so the State Water Board is trying to put forth a plan that's going to leave some more water in the rivers. It's the problem because people are used to being able to take all this water out, but the truth is that we're not going to be able to have salmon and native species in rivers that have no water. Hmm. So it's a very it's a very push and pull thing, and the State Water Board has made this determination for the San Joaquin River and its tributaries, and they've signaled also that they're going to make similar demands from the Sacramento Valley and those rivers that feed into the Delta. People like to get mad and they like to say, the State Water Board's just trying to get more water for the tunnels, but I don't think that's true. I think they're trying to get more water. They're trying to allow more fresh water to flow out from the Delta into the San Francisco Bay because the San Francisco Bay has an ecosystem that's also dependent on getting some fresh water from tributaries, of which the Delta is the main one into there.
Right.
There's kind of an old style of thinking that water going straight to the sea is wasted, but, there are these bays, like the San Francisco Bay, that hosts a lot of, seafood, shellfish, things that fishermen fish out of there, and that the bays are also suffering from not getting any fresh water. Mm. It's a very contentious thing.
Everything to do with water is contentious these days.
Yes.
Well, what's interesting is that they have an appropriations bill in D.C. now that was passed by the House that has three amendments attached to it right now, currently as it stands, as it goes into the Senate to be, negotiated and approved. One of them would take the Delta tunnels and it would exempt it from judicial review, so courts couldn't look at it. And then another congressman extended that to all California water infrastructure projects that might be built. And then another congressman added in another one that would essentially hamstring the state's water board's ability to implement this flow plan that they're trying to implement by removing all federal funding from the state water board. So, and we have farmers, calling for abolition of the state water board. So, you know, these are some fun times.
I guess you get to listen to all of these when you go to those meetings. And
that's right. Stay tuned.
Well, it's really hard. I mean, if you really want to get down to, you know, what are the California water wars about? They're really about one thing. It's allocating the water we have between the environment, the cities, and the farm. And everybody has a different take on how that allocation should go.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the hard part, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the farmers grow our food, and that's important, and we need them. But we also like salmon, and we like water in the rivers, and we like, you know, seafood and the things that we have, too. And, you know, we in the cities want to live, and we want to, you know, be able to be comfortable with the water that we have. So it's really hard.
It's hard to take things away when you already have them, so... Hey, I do hear another quickie subject here is Hoover Dam. They're going to get $3 billion plan to turn Hoover Dam into a giant battery?
Well, they're talking about this. I don't know if it will get implemented. I'm not sure exactly.
This wasn't from the guy from Tesla, was it?
No, but there's this thing that they do with reservoirs, and it's called pump storage, and we actually use this in L.A. Up here in the northern part. We have Castaic Lake, and we have Pyramid Lake, which is located just a few miles up the hill.
Right.
And what they do is they take during the day, they run water down these pipes into a hydroelectric plant from Pyramid to Castaic Lake, and that generates electricity. And this is this peak hydropower, which is really important because when we all turn on our air conditioners and they have to put energy into the electrical grid, they need a way to do it fast, and it's hard to do it with turbines. So they use hydropower. You can just send water down the tunnels, you know, down these tunnels, and they go through the hydropower plant. You got electricity. They catch that water at the bottom, and then in the nighttime when the electricity prices drop, they pump that water back up into Pyramid Lake. And believe it or not,
it's a recycled battery.
Yeah, well, they do this a lot. This is the way that they can, you know, kind of leverage power prices and create this sort of instant electrical way. And they're thinking about trying to figure out how to do this with Hoover Dam. Now, the reason why they can do it with Castaic Lake is it's reservoir to reservoir, and they have actually an upper reservoir that catches that water so they can send that water back up to Pyramid Lake without the whole lake going up and down, which would be, like, really irritating to boating and recreation if it's going up and down all day, right? But I don't know how they would do this necessarily at the Colorado River in Hoover Dam because that's a very narrow passage.
Yeah,
but they got a plan, and they think they can do it. But that's the general idea.
Seems like you need two lakes in close proximity to each other, right? And you spend all that money to pump it back up when you've just generated the electricity. It's like, you know, it's like you and me standing in a bucket and trying to lift ourselves up by the handle.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's all about leveraging power at when it's cheap to create it when it's expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds so old-fashioned, but, you know, really, electricity is generated in the same old way it always has, the magnetic thing going around, you know?
Yep, that's
it's like
true.
It's spinning a turbine. It's all the same, you know?
Hey, Chris, we wanted to personally thank you for calling in a little later than usual. This was our guest was calling from Virginia, and he's on a 3-hour, obviously, time difference. But we always love you starting the show for us, and now we're very excited that you ended the show for us.
Yep, we'll be on time next week.
Yep.
No problem. I can be flexible.
Oh, okay. You're our bendable buddy and flexible friend. We like that. Anyway, you're a nice lady, and we really appreciate it. Anybody go to mavensnotebook.com. Please help sponsor her. She's a wonderful news person. So anyway, we'll catch you next week. Everybody have a good week. And the most important thing to do is
think blue.
Good night, everybody.
Everyone.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.